VOA's Jeff Custer with your worldwide news update. Israeli forces carried out extensive airstrikes Monday in southern Lebanon, which Lebanon reports killed at least 182 people and injured 727 others. Meanwhile, the Israeli military Monday called on residents of southern Lebanon to immediately evacuate their homes and other buildings where it claimed Hezbollah stored weapons. Associated Press correspondent Karen Chamas has this report.
The warning was the first of its kind in nearly a year of steadily escalating conflict and came after a particularly heavy exchange of fire between Israel's military and Lebanese militant group Hezbollah the day before. When asked about a possible ground operation in southern Lebanon, Israeli military spokesman Daniel Hagari said, "We have organized plans. We presented them to the political level, and I say it again, we will do whatever it takes to return the residents of the north safely back to their homes. Communities on both sides of the border have largely emptied out because of the near daily exchanges of fire. I'm Karen Chamas."
U.S. President Joe Biden makes his final presidential address before the U.N. General Assembly this week, but hanging over that final speech to a major international forum are world conflicts and how his actions have shaped them. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from New York.
Analysts expect Biden to discuss his support of Israel and his support of Ukraine in this year's address. They spotlight those two conflicts as major challenges as he ends his presidency. Jim Kessler is Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way.
With the Middle East, this looks like, how do you keep the lid on this and hope the conflict doesn't spiral out of control into a regional war?
Kessler said many leaders will give Biden a warm welcome during his valedictory speech, as he has used his term to rebuild alliances and reestablish global norms. Biden speaks in New York Tuesday. Anita Powell, VOA News, New York.
This is VOA News. Under tight security, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky Sunday visited a Scranton, Pennsylvania ammunition factory to thank the workers who are producing one of the most critically needed munitions for his country's fight to fend off Russian ground forces. Zelensky was greeted by Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro and Democratic Congressman Matt Cartwright. Zelensky expressed his gratitude to the employees at the plant and the U.S. as a whole.
The United States helped us from the very beginning of full-scale war, but we still count on continuing support. We are thankful to President Biden, bipartisan support, and thanks to such plants and such workers.
The Scranton plant is one of the few facilities in the country to manufacture the 155-millimeter artillery shells and has increased production over the past year. Ukraine has already received more than 3 million of the shells from the U.S. Zelensky will speak at the U.N. General Assembly in New York Tuesday, and Thursday will travel to Washington for talks with President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. Pope Francis canceled his audiences Monday because of a slight flu-like state, just days before he's to embark on a trip to Belgium and Luxembourg. VOA's Tommy McNeil reports.
The move was described by the Vatican as a precaution. Francis is due to visit Luxembourg on Thursday, then spend the rest of the week in Belgium, ending with a mass in Brussels on Sunday. The 87-year-old Francis, who has battled a series of health problems in recent years, has had a packed schedule of audiences since returning from a four-nation 11-day journey through Asia on September 13th. That was the longest and farthest trip of his pontificate. The statement from the Holy See Press Office described Francis as having a flu-like state. Through much of last winter, Francis battled acute bronchitis and recurring bouts of influenza, which forced him to cancel a quick trip to Dubai to participate in the UN Climate Conference. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Democratic candidate U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris and Republican candidate former President Donald Trump seek to expand their appeal in the final weeks of a fiercely competitive U.S. presidential election campaign. AP correspondent Jennifer King reports.
As voting for the general election begins in some states, former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris are looking to blur the lines to woo independent and undecided voters. Trump says abortion laws should be left to the states, but says he supports a federal law to force insurance companies to pay for IVF. He also irked fiscal conservatives by suggesting the government cap credit card interest at 10%. Meanwhile, the Harris campaign has been trying to connect with moderate and disaffected Republican voters. With events on abortion rights, small business creation, and border security will feature Republican officials. Jennifer King, Washington.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Jeff Custer, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And I'm very happy that today I have arrived in this city and the multinational security support mission is on its 100th day.
That was Kenyan President William Ruto in Haiti meeting with police officers he dispatched to the troubled Caribbean nation as part of a UN mission to quell violent gangs. Details coming up. Also, the UN General Assembly is underway, starting with a summit aimed at finding ways to modernize the world body. And we look at the weekend in the world of sports. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The 79th session of the United Nations General Assembly is underway in New York City, kicking off with what's being called the Summit of the Future to look at ways to modernize the UN. World leaders have gathered to engage in the annual high-level general debate under the theme Leaving No One Behind, Acting Together for the Advancement of Peace, Sustainable Development, and the Human Dignity for Present and Future Generations. Our reporter at the UN, Margaret Bashir, a little while ago talked with me first about the big agenda at this year's UN General Assembly.
Well, I think really the wars in Gaza, Ukraine, and Sudan are going to dominate leaders' speeches this week, side meetings, bilaterals between leaders. These are the three biggest pressing issues. They affect not just the three countries and regions where they're happening, but they have global implications. So these are definitely high on the agenda. And then we also have going on, started on Sunday and it's concluding today, the Summit for the Future. And this is Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General's signature event this year. The idea is to make a blueprint for global institutional reform. He said, we can't create a future fit for our grandchildren with systems built for our grandparents, since most multilateral institutions grew out of World War II, which is, nearly a century ago now. So this has been also a major side event here at the UN this week. A lot of world leaders here for that.
And Margaret, what are the big issues for African nations?
Well, I think coming out of this Summit of the Future that we're in right now, they adopted what's called a Pact for the Future by consensus on Sunday. It was a little bit down to the wire. There were some objections from the Russians. They had been raising some objections to language in the document throughout the negotiations in the last week or so. These are months-long negotiations that wrapped up. But I think one of the big things in the document is about Security Council reform. The UN Security Council has 15 members, and for decades, really, countries in the global south have been pressing for the Council to expand, saying that they're not well represented. And this Pact for the Future commits to expanding the Security Council to make it more reflective of today's world. And it says to redress the historical injustice against Africa, which has no permanent seat. And we heard from the U.S. ambassador last week that the United States, the Biden administration, supports two permanent seats for Africa on the Council. However, one of the caveats is that they don't support anybody who gets a permanent seat now getting a veto. So the veto would still remain with the five traditional powers. But this is still the biggest step toward enlarging the Security Council since 1963. And I think it may get some traction now after, honestly, decades of people just talking about it. We may actually start to see something, and that would be big for Africa. And the other big thing, I think, is reform of the international financial institutions that's mentioned in this pact, debt refinancing. So many countries in Africa are drowning in debt, especially after the COVID pandemic. So that would be a huge step for Africa. Political front, the war in Sudan.
Definitely the war on Sudan. Who are the participants in the Summit of the Future today?
Right. So today we're going to be wrapping up the Summit of the Future, and we're going to hear from the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. He's arrived in New York. He'll be speaking later this afternoon. The president of Ukraine will also be speaking at the summit today. But we also have a lot of African leaders, presidents of Botswana, Senegal, Mauritania, Libya, Mauritius. We have a lot of African leaders also speaking today. This morning, we're going to hear from Zimbabwe's president. So we have a lot of action.
VOA UN reporter Margaret Bashir, she talked to me from New York. Kenyan President William Ruto arrived in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, over the weekend, where the Kenyan police force is battling gangs that have brought the country to its knees. Ruto stepped off the plane, walking past armed officers on a small patch of red carpet flanked by Haitian officials. He then headed to a Kenyan base at the airport, where he met with police tasked with restoring a semblance of security. In a speech, Ruto recalled how Kenya became the first nation to send forces as part of a more significant effort by the UN to offer international support to Haiti, which has spiraled into conflict and political turmoil since the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse in 2021.
And I'm very happy that today I have arrived in this city and the multinational security support mission is on its 100-day presence. On the suggestion to transit this into a fully UN peacekeeping mission, we have absolutely no problem if that is the direction the UN Security Council wants to take it.
For more perspective on Ruto's visit, VOA's Paul Ndiho spoke with Edgar Gitua, an international security and diplomatic expert at Strathmore University in Nairobi, Kenya.
At least the Kenyan contingent currently of 400 soldiers, 400 policemen, so far so good. They've done a commendable job, of course, with a bit of challenges. Reports indicate they have settled in well. Reports indicate they have been able to work hand-in-hand with the Haitian police force in reclaiming some of the areas from the gangs. We're talking about the airport, we're talking about one of the big hospitals within Port-au-Prince and some of the residential neighborhoods. So, and creating a humanitarian corridor that has allowed some Haitians who had run away to come back. So we can say gradually they have gone there. It's been a mixed bag. There have been some few complaints from Haitians who probably want them to move a bit faster. But I think the Kenyans and the Haitian police force are still not at the place where they feel they can move as fast as they want because of the logistics, the lack of resources, and they need, of course, better equipment. But so far, so good.
How significant is this trip for President William Ruto, considering the fact that he's faced a lot of challenges back home?
Yeah.
You have an uprising of young people taking onto the streets, but here we see Kenyans also trying to bring what a lot of people said was not possible, a semblance of peace in Haiti.
The diplomatic optics, number one, for Kenya are very good. And the dividend, Kenya will reap a very huge dividend when this mission becomes eventually concludes in a successful manner. For President William Ruto, there are two things. Number one, he silences all the naysayers who told him, you are sending our boys to go and die. You're sending us into a bloodbath. So that in itself gives him that moral authority to tell them, I know what I was talking about. I told you our boys were ready for this. On the flip side, when the Kenyans and the Kenyans, when we watch documentaries and we see Kenyans succeeding, it also builds, it gives us confidence and trust that we have a police force that is able to do a lot. And then, of course, on the flip side, the bigger question now for us becomes, then why can't they quell the banditry in our own country? Why can't they deal with our own internal security issues that have, you know, that have become a problem here and there? But having said that, Kenya gains diplomatically. It raises our stature. We are able to attract military aid. We are able to attract security aid. We are able to be a country that can be relied on, not only in the region, but in Africa. Post-conflict reconstruction, Paul, is usually a very long process. It is not a walk in the park. Today, things could be working out because of you know, we have the goodwill and the support of the Haitians. If after 4 or 5 months, the Haitians begin to become impatient, feeling like the Kenyans are really not bringing the change, the radical change we thought they would bring, when the ground starts shifting, the gangs start becoming stronger. We have to train the police force. At some point, we have to disarm those gangs. At some point, we have to convince Barbecue, Jimmy Cherizier and his gangs to lay down their weapons. That is a long, drawn process. And so you want to make hay while the sun is shining. You want to make as many gains as possible.
Edward Gituwa is an international security and diplomatic expert at Strathmore University in Nairobi, Kenya. An African affairs expert says the UN General Assembly should be more involved in promoting peace and development in Africa. Tunde Babawela, a professor of African politics at the University of Lagos, says, though the UN General Assembly is relevant, it has not lived up to the expectations of African people in helping them overcome poverty and degradation while promoting peace and stability. He says, if these objectives are met, it will erase the feelings of some scholars and observers that the body is just a talk shop. Babawela spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye on the expectations of African nations and the General Assembly.
I'm not persuaded that the United Nations General Assembly has lived up to the expectations of the people of Africa in terms of its assisting them to overcome the problem of poverty, degradation, and of course, promoting peace and stability within the continent. While I'm not advocating that the United Nations General Assembly is not relevant outrightly, I believe it could be more relevant if it gets itself more involved in promoting peace, in promoting development within the African continent. And that will make the feeling that observers and scholars now have about the body being more of a talk shop to become a thing of the past.
President Bola Tinubu is expected to address the UN General Assembly. He will be represented by Nigeria's Vice President, Kashim Shettima. What should be the focus of his speech?
I think his focus should be, first of all, to talk about the need to confront the problem of poverty within Nigeria, seek for assistance and partnership within the UN, and that should be extended to other nations across the world, such that we could have a frontal attack on poverty within the continent and within Nigeria in particular. My view, and several studies have shown this, that the problem of insurgency, the problem of criminality within the country can be traced partially to the issues relating to poverty and deprivation. And that once we address those issues of poverty, issues of misery, issues of deprivation, we are likely to some extent to have begun to address the problem of poverty within the country. Secondly, we must talk about the importance of climate change and the impact it has had negatively on Nigeria. The recent experience of the terrible flooding we experienced in Borno State is a thing that is unsettling. And there is a need for the United Nations to support Nigeria with expertise, with resources, not just to help those who have been victims of flooding, of desertification, of erosion, but also to assist us in preventing such disasters from happening in the country. A lot of people, running to millions, have now been displaced within Borno State alone. You can imagine what the situation will be if we have two of that replicated, two or three of that replicated in other parts of Nigeria. There is a need for us to take preventive measures, and we need the assistance of the global body to develop the capability and capacity to be able to take very firm preventive measures. And also, when it happens, we need more support from the United Nations in terms of providing food aid and other kinds of aid to alleviate the sufferings of the people who are victims of climate change.
Do you think the African Union should make a special case for the continent at the General Assembly?
Again, you asked the question about whether African Union should make a special case for the continent at the General Assembly. I think that goes without saying, because Africa is at the moment holding the short end of the stick in that UN body. 28% of the votes from the UN is traceable to the continent as a bloc. And yet it is ironic that that bloc does not have a permanent seat in the Security Council. I think one important request that needs to be made is that African countries must have representation, must have permanent seats in the UN Security Council.
And that was Tunde Babawale, a professor of African politics at the University of Lagos, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonier. As you just heard, world leaders are gathered in New York this week for the annual UN General Assembly. We had reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar, Senegal, speak with people there about what they want world leaders to focus on for African nations. Accountant Terno Diallo says creating jobs should be the top priority.
I can say in Africa, all sectors of the social society are in the crisis. The very cause of this is the poor economy. And in my opinion, the world leaders should focus on helping Africa create more jobs for young people and more added value for their commodities. And the only way African people can achieve this is by developing their agriculture and their industry.
Safitu Fall, who works for the Social Security in Senegal, also thinks job creation for young people is important. But she also says there are other important issues.
The premier point, il s'agit de l'emploi des jeunes. Énormément de jeunes sont au chômage, des jeunes qui ont fait les études.
She says job creation is her first point, but next is building infrastructure because there cannot be development without infrastructure. And she says next is illegal migration. Fall says there should be an effort to prevent people from dying on risky sea voyages, and there should be policies that grant more visas for educated and skilled people to work in Europe. Adu Karnateng is a journalist from Ghana who was visiting Dakar. He says creating more trade opportunities for African nations should be a priority at the UN.
Yes, what we want them to do for us now is to remove the trade restrictions and then huge trade tariffs on our exports. Africa needs the freedom to export its products and make enough revenue to develop the continent. We don't need any restriction. We don't need any imposition of tariffs on our products. I mean, they've classified most of our products as substandard, which is a lie, because they want to subdue us so that they can rather export their products to the continent. We want them to reduce the trade tariffs. We want them to remove the trade tariffs. We want them to remove restrictions, you know.
He says doing that would allow African nations to add value to the natural resources they have, such as refining oil, producing chocolate, and polishing diamonds, which would create more jobs. We'll be covering the UN General Assembly all week. You can find our coverage on voaafrica.com, voanews.com, and all your favorite social media. You can share your thoughts on the General Assembly with us by calling our WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. In the U.S. presidential election, Republicans have spread false claims that migrants in the Midwest state of Ohio are eating residents' pet cats and dogs. That has led to security threats and more divisions in an election where immigration is a central campaign issue. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
Ohio State Police sweep school classrooms and keep watch outside after dozens of violent threats. They follow false claims that Haitian immigrants in the city of Springfield are eating people's pets. Local pastor Bernadette Dorr says Haitians feel threatened.
We're not used to that in an American society where Haitians are targeting for something they don't do.
Those false claims online and in campaign speeches come from presidential candidate Donald Trump and his running mate, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance. Trump said Haitian immigrants in Springfield are eating people's cats and dogs.
I can say this, we will do large deportations from Springfield, Ohio. Large deportations. We're going to get these people out.
With state and local officials saying there are no credible reports of anyone eating household animals, Vance told NBC News that he's heard about it from voters.
But I'm not repeating them because I invented them out of thin air. I'm repeating them because my constituents are saying these things are happening.
More than 15,000 Haitian migrants came legally to this city of 60,000 people because of jobs and a relatively low cost of living. Migrant Cleo Parizon told VOA he saw on the internet how people are talking about Haitians misbehaving. There's no proof, but still, he says he doesn't walk around town as much. Trump's opponent in this election, Kamala Harris, says what's going on in Springfield is shameful.
Law enforcement resources being put into this because of these serious threats that are being issued against a community that is living a productive, good life before this happened. And spewing lies that are grounded in tropes that are age old.
Springfield Mayor Rob Rue says politicians who put his city in the national political spotlight need to help restore calm.
We'd like those that on the national stage that can bring peace, that could tamper their words and speak truth. That's what Springfield is asking. We need peace.
Trump and Vance both say they intend to visit Springfield to see for themselves what's going on there. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
And now for our sports roundup. I have in studio our analyst, Mokbil Yabaro. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yehaze.
So the English Premier League had some exciting football matches over the weekend. Can you fill us on it?
Absolutely, Yehaze. The match of the weekend happened on Sunday. It was yesterday, the only English Premier League fixture. It was Arsenal versus Manchester City. These two teams are arguably the two best teams in the league. Mm-hmm. Last two seasons, they have competed for the number one and number two spot, with Man City edging them out both times. Last season, Arsenal were able to get 4 points out of the potential 6 points out of their fixtures by drawing with them at Man City's home in the Etihad 0-0, and by getting a win when they were at home in the Emirates 3-1. Now, this is the first matchup of both giants, and it was filled with action. The first half, first goal happened by Erling Haaland. He's the fastest player to score 10 goals in a season. Wow. The young man has scored over 100 goals in under 100 games, I believe, for the Premier League. And he scored within the first 8 minutes. They go up 1-0. After that, chaos ensues. Arsenal is able to score back within a few minutes and then go up ahead with a set piece right before the half. But then a red card was issued to them, and they ended up in a defensive block for the rest of the game. And Man City equalized with maybe a few seconds left in the game. The game ends 2-2. Both teams able to get get 1 point out of the fixtures, and so much commentating after the fact. So we'll see how this rivalry continues moving forward. Liverpool were able to solidify an easier win against Bournemouth 3-0. And Chelsea were able to win against West Ham 3-0. So Chelsea's a team that usually has been in that top six category. Last year, they were pretty mediocre, but they are coming back with a vengeance. Struggling. With a new manager. So they're doing really well this season.
And in boxing news, Mokbil, IBF heavyweight champion Daniel Dubois knocked out former champ Anthony Joshua. Was this expected, or was this an upset?
Absolutely not expected, Yehaez. People were watching thinking this is Anthony Joshua's big fight.
Wow.
Back. His agent, his promoter, Eddie Hearns, was expecting for Anthony Joshua to be able to beat Daniel Dubois, get the title, to get that Tyson Fury versus Anthony Joshua fight that they've been looking for some time. Now, with this setback, do they do a rematch, or do they wait for that Tyson Fury versus Alexander Usyk fight to see if Tyson Fury loses, and then to get a fight, that mega fight that they're soul searching for?
And the WNBA playoffs kicked off. How did the first games turn out?
The games were not too great. I would say that the Fever with Caitlin Clark, it really did not go their way. It unfortunately they lost by a huge margin of 69-93, but we'll see how they do on Tuesday.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer and sports analyst, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Bob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.